When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
My name is Maximus Decimus Meridius.
I am Iron Man.
Hello, and welcome to the Post Credit Podcast. I am your host, Eric Italiano, senior writer at BroBible.com. Today, as always, I am joined by my co-host, Kate Onder, the hottest free agent in the video game, entertainment, writing, PR space. You could find Kate at Cade underscore Onder on Twitter.com. Twitter.com. I'm showing the fact that I'm 31 by still calling it .com. Today we're talking about Dune 2, and literally every time I say or hear the word Dune 2, I think about, have you seen that meme about the neighbor from Office Space? And he's like, yeah, I'm
Dune 2 chicks.
Dune 2 chicks at the same time. I literally cannot hear that word and not think about it. So Dune Part 2, Denis Villeneuve's upcoming. Kate, if you had to make a bet of $100 of what this film's global box office total is going to be
at the end,
yeah,
when it's all said and done,
yeah, and you would win if you were within $50 million.
Let me check the Dune Part One box office. I'm gonna do
well, but that was 2021, so that's
so that was like data.
That's
had HBO Max day and date. So that, and that still made $434 million. Like, that was pretty significant. Yeah. That was a big success. Sure. I'm gonna go $600 million.
That feels low.
It does, but like, I don't know. It's such like a weird movie that, and I don't. The first movie had this like benefit of like people probably didn't know what it was in the general audience. The people that were going for Timothée Chalamet, the people that were going for Zendaya, they didn't know what it was. And I do think some people didn't fuck with it as much, especially I'm seeing now people are like, I'm rewatching Dune Part One. This movie's so slow. It's so boring. And
it's funny. I actually like Dune more now on rewatch.
Really?
So the first time you watch any film.
Yeah.
You are most enraptured with the plot. You want to know what happens next. So you're constantly on edge, looking forward towards that. So I'm going into Dune expecting this massive sci-fi that I've never heard of before. So when it wound up being like a rather political focused and like a backroom, backstabbing stillness and slowness, in the moment, I was like, well, this is not what I expected.
Yeah.
The story didn't unfold as audaciously as I had hoped.
Sure.
But now, once you're able to rewatch something without sort of the pressure of being excited for what comes next, and you could appreciate the nuances of what you're seeing, I think that I enjoyed it a lot more. In fact, I actually think I like the plot of Dune 1 more than Dune 2. Now, but that's a different story. So
yeah, I haven't watched Dune Part 1 since the theater. I haven't. I kind of left that experience on its own because I really enjoyed it in the theater. And I'm like, I don't know if I can enjoy it as much as I did at home. Especially I'm very ADHD at home, so I would be like all over the place. I could probably see myself watching the second one at home more. It's got a lot more momentum behind it, I think. Even if you like the plot of one more, I think there's just a lot more going on that can keep you actively engaged. And that's what I was looking for out of this movie, because a lot of people were like, Dune Part 1 kind of setting up Part 2. Part 2 is where shit's going to kick off. And I was like, all right, let's see how much it kicks off. And it does. That movie goes places.
I just looked it up real quick. It's currently projected to reach $175 million globally in its opening weekend without opening in China. It doesn't hit China until the following week. I'd say that this is probably a $750 million, $800 million. If you think, because here's the greatest trick that this film pulled. its use of young stars is going to get young people to the theaters. And from Oppenheimer to Barbie to Rise of Gru, when you get young people going to the theaters, that's when you make those that crazy money. So I think the combination of Zendaya, Chalamet, Butler, Pugh has had that sort of not only global effect, because Zendaya and Chalamet and Pugh, not quite Butler yet, probably soon, are like global stars. Plus they're young. So that's why I think it's going to make, I mean, I think
that's, you know, what I'm hopeful for.
Yeah. So go ahead.
I was just going to say, I don't know if you saw my tweet, but I talked about one of the genius things that Denis Villeneuve did with, I guess, the whole franchise at this point, is he's been casting those younger names. Like, he, I said, this is the kind of cast you would have seen back in like 2013 during the big young adult novel adaptation boom.
Great point.
Cause like, think about the Hunger Games. They had like fucking Philip Seymour Hoffman, you know, all these huge actors in that movie. And this movie is kind of replicating that. It's like, this is a very dense, weird story. You cannot just sell it on the big grand scale on its own. You need those kinds of big names to kind of get people in as like a vehicle, and then you can hopefully win them over. When I saw Dune Part 2, there were families there, whole families of like really young kids, which I was a little bit surprised by, because this movie's really dark. But I mean, this is a family outing, I guess. Like, people are taking everyone.
Is it R?
PG-13.
Whoa.
Very hard PG-13.
That is fucking impressive.
It is. The first movie makes sense as PG-13. I don't think it's too graphic, but this one's like goes pretty violent, especially by the end.
Yeah, but there's not much blood and gore.
Austin Butler slits a woman's neck.
Yes, but I don't think they show the blood and gore.
It's like black, right? I think that's the way they get around it. Like, because they're not showing blood, it's like black, it's like oily or whatever. And so that's, again, the brilliant of this movie is making it as accessible as he possibly can to get as many people in, and doing those cheats where he can kind of get away with the darkness, the violence, imply it or whatever, but still make it PG-13.
Yeah.
And you don't
theater. I wonder if that was his call from the start. You know what I mean? Where did that choice come from? Because there's a, you know what? Spoiler warning. We are going to talk about the movie Dune Part 2 in its entirety, starting at this point. Once we're done with this tangent, we'll start fresh. There's a scene of implied fucking, right? If this is an R film, how much further does he push that?
There's a couple scenes.
But I don't even really know if Denis Villeneuve is that type of filmmaker. His films are largely sexless. I mean, Yeah, but
that's a whole movie about affairs and cheating and
yeah, but stuff. I don't think that there's like any,
I don't think there's any graphic
romantic scenes in it. That's like an angry movie.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of any like proper sex scenes in his movies. I mean, like you said, there's
2049 where she like hires, but that's not, they don't show that either. Regardless, I wonder, because when you have Oppenheimer rated R, almost a billion, why couldn't Dune Part 2 do that as well? I'm not sure it matters, but now that realizing for the first time that it's PG-13, I'm pretty surprised.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you have to take into account, this is like it's a sequel. It's a weirder story. It's not as like you can just get people in to come in off, you know, the basis of it being one and done.
I don't know if I agree. I think that this one has more public appeal generally than Dune Part 1 did. Because Dune Part 1 came out at a time where people weren't going to theaters and then therefore aren't as touched with film culture as much. Butler wasn't famous yet. Chalamet, Pugh, Zendaya are literally all older and have been famous for longer. So I think that that is probably the number one reason that, more other than COVID.
But
go ahead.
I don't think it needs to be R. Like, they get away with everything they need to do with it being PG-13. I don't feel like the movie's lacking. Like you said, there's basically like two quote unquote sex scenes in the movie. There's one of Zendaya and Timothy after they've had sex. Like, you see, if you're one of those people on Twitter that's like, I hate sex scenes, why can't they just show me what happens after? You get that in this movie. And then one with you know,
Butler.
Butler and Lea Seydoux.
Yep.
And you don't see it, but you see kind of the start of it and the implications of what happens with that. So I mean, like, it's like, do I need to see that? Again, I don't care if you show me sex scenes in a movie, but it's like the movie does not, like, it's a almost 3-hour movie, right? So it's like, fucking just show me that this shit's pregnant.
And I'm not trying to, like, say this film needs more tits and blood, but what sure, I'm saying is, I am just curious.
Whose decision?
Whose idea it was that this should be PG-13? Because you could easily make this film R. Like, if he easily swayed to the R.
If he wants to have as safe of a chance to get to Dune Messiah as he wants, then I say PG-13 is the best course of action. Because, like I said, you're not losing enough to be like, oh, I wish this was rated R. Give me the director's cut of this movie. He still goes to the places he needs to go. And I'm just glad that he's able to deliver that efficiently, effectively, know how to use those cheats and cut corners to make it still implied. Like you said, you didn't even know. So, like,
I didn't know.
There you go. Like, that, if it's effective enough that you would think that it's rated R, like, I'd say fucking well played, man.
All right, let's do this. General thoughts, Cade. Cade, your review went viral, I believe. I think if you just tweeted the word Dune Part 2 for that 2-day stretch there, it would, like, catch fire. So you don't have to go bar for bar, of course, but why don't you share your general thoughts about the film?
Yeah, I was really taken aback by the whole experience, seeing it blown up on IMAX screens. You know, I love IMAX so much. And feeling the loudness of the machines in the movie, the music, the action. I had seen trailers, but I didn't pay attention to them. I did that very intentionally. I was like, I want to go in as blind as I possibly can to this. And it was so worth it. See, everything that happens towards the end with the big, you know, climax of the movie was all a big surprise for me. And I was so excited by it. I was just really impressed by, I think, Denny's precognizant ability to be like, if one works and we get to do the sequel, we're going to have so much payoff. You know, all these callbacks, whether it be through the visions that Timothy or Paul Atreides has been having, or, you know, the I recognize your footsteps, old man, like that line. I'm like, that's my shit. And there's all these just amazing moments throughout the movie that, you know, continuously builds up a sense of momentum. I would say it like there's some momentum left over from the first movie that it kind of takes the baton and runs with it, continues to build on that momentum until you get this really.
I mean, they pick right up.
Yeah, I think they're because they're
still carrying jumps.
They're still on the journey to where they're
like
going.
Now, who's like now through death is his boy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, you fucking killed me. We're boys.
We are bound by literal blood.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just a really amazing large scale experience that, and it's also very clear to me that Warner Brothers was like, you succeed with the first movie, just go all in, just do your thing.
It's
whatever
such a
you
weird studio. It's like, how do they pull this off and Wonka and Barbie, but then
the
still
DC
like
movies.
Generally just be considered like they're just running around with their heads cut off.
Yeah, when they let a guy who's like just in charge, like leave a director to do their fucking work, it usually works out. Exactly. If you trust the guy who's going to deliver something big to just fucking do his job, he'll probably do it. And I mean, this movie's weird. It's strange. There's some things that they're setting up for the third movie that I'm like, I can't believe if they go there, that's going to be like just bonkers.
Like what?
Like the stuff with Lea Seydoux's character, I think. I don't know what happens in that book, but the implications that they're leaving there with her pregnancy is very interesting to me. Do we want to spoil this?
Spoiler territory, yep. Go for
it.
Okay. Spoiler warning for Dune, the whole fucking plot. I've warned you twice now.
I want to know if they're going to bring back Austin Butler's character in some way through this child. Because as far as I understand, I guess spoilers for Dune Messiah as well, the one thing I do know about that is Jason Momoa's character is coming back. And
I've heard that too, as like a zombie or something. Yeah
so I'm like, if you can do that with a baby and have Austin Butler's character come back, because I'm like, the one thing I was disappointed.
But she said it's
like,
a girl.
Oh, did they?
Yes.
And are you sure? Because
she said
the baby
it's a girl.
That
She said, "It's a girl as you wished," because they made a whole.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
They made a whole stink about Jessica in the first one going against them and doing a boy. So, but I mean, look, I think that all that shit's on the fucking table because
absolutely, yeah. So all of the possibilities there are cool, and I mean,
they're doing it. I just put out a tweet today that Hans Zimmer is already doing the
writing music.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm very interested in all the directions they're going with that, and what's her name, Anna Taylor-Joy, right?
Yep.
Yeah, whatever they're gonna do with her, I'm sure she's coming back. You don't cast an actor like that for half a second. There's all these interesting lingering threads, and I think the thing that also excites me the most is, like, again, not knowing what happens in the third book or the second book, is Chani, I think is her name, is Zendaya's character. She seems to be the hero of this story.
It closing on her face is a huge tell.
Yeah, and she is kind of this figure that Paul Atreides saw himself in a lot of these heroic visions in the first movie, and then she is fulfilling it in the second movie, and I'm like, holy fuck! And that's the kind of stuff I'm talking about, where, like, Denis sets the stage in the first movie, and it's like, if this works, we're gonna do something really cool in the next one, and you just pay off.
Cue the why is Dune gone woke comments when Dune came out in like 1962. Dumbasses. all right, look, Dune Part One, I remember coming out bummed, as I just said at the top of the show, you know, and I talk about this all the time, managing expectations for art you're excited for art you love, for art you love, for art you've never experienced before. It's a difficult thing to do. So when I'm going into Dune 2, it literally has the highest IMDb score of all time. I'm seeing 5 stars left, right, and center. It's being compared to The Dark Knight and Empire Strikes Back. And it's like, all right. So, I mean, this is the bar that's been set. I guess that's cool. I don't think it is in the class of those two films or even Denis' Blade Runner 2049. Visually, this might be the most impressive film I've ever seen.
I would say so, yeah.
Not just visually, but sonically, texturally. His whole decision to black and white the Harkonnen's world, but only at particular moments, is something that a lesser director could try and it would feel like a shtick, but it all adds to this like world building and immersion that I think is like a step forward for film in general, because I forgot that I didn't forget that I was watching a film, but when you watch Ant-Man 3, right, you're like, I'm in a fucking cartoon bouncy house, you know? Watching Dune 2, I'm like, I'm on the planet Arrakis.
You know,
I'm
what my
fucking Dune.
My favorite touch was of that black and white stuff. They have these little fireworks that go off.
Oh, and
it's
like
big
ink,
puddles
ink,
of oil.
Like, it's like ink splatters. Yeah.
It's like, that's like those, that's their way of celebrating, is they have these fucking ink blots just splattered across the sky. That really tells you something about those people and how fucking dark their world is, that they don't have even colors in their fireworks.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So it's all that stuff that just in terms of like a five senses experience.
Yeah.
And I should add, I saw this. I completely forgot. I saw this in those 4DX theaters.
Yeah.
Which was like a Disneyland ride, basically. Once I got over the sort of shock of how much my chair was moving.
That shit's annoying.
But once I like understood when to expect it and when not to, it was fucking sick. That's, I gotta be honest with you. So I don't know how much that's contributing to my immersion feel. I'm sure there's a bit, but just from a world building, his ability to combine tech that is futuristic and looks old in a foreign planet that has characteristics of Earth, and blending those things all in one is unbelievable. But cinema to me, and Denis Villeneuve will literally say, I don't care about talking. I am an image maker. And that's fine. I see cinema ultimately as storytelling. And to tell a story, you need a narrative. And that is where this film falls short for me, because the narrative remains the same basically the entire time. Paul begins a prophet. He remains one throughout the entire film, and he is one at the end. And while his journey to get there is a bit bumpy, you never question whether he's going to get there all the same. Even Paul knows that he's like, I'm going to be a fucking, right. I'm going to be that dude. And so the only drama becomes the way in which he chooses to wield that power. The problem is that the Dune story is so popular, I went into it knowing that Paul's arc is kind of dark. And is that the film's fault? No. But when you're adapting a popular, one of the most popular American stories ever written, that is the cost of doing business. But regardless, and this is why I think I like the plot of Dune 1 more, because it better portrays the hero's journey, not a destination. But because Paul begins at the end, he's a prophet. It's difficult for me to sort of emotionally latch onto him and follow him through this.
Do you think that this is a case of this being one story that they split into two parts, where this could almost be the third act of that story?
That's a really good point.
I get it, because it is still a movie, right? You do need the structure and stuff.
No, that's a great point. I had not thought of that. That is a really good point. I think if I were to assess it in totality, I think that that's the case for the project at large, right?
Probably.
This is going to one day be like a Lord of the Rings type thing, where throwing on the extended cut and just watching it for a day straight is going to be a very popular thing. So that has caused me to change my mind a bit and amend my feelings in that regard, because I forgot to take it within the context of where he starts in Dune 1.
Sure.
So, okay. So I'm going to bump it then from 4 stars to 4.5 stars. I appreciate his hero's journey more, but ultimately for me, a 5-star film is a Dark Knight Blade Runner 2049 film, which I think is a apt comparison here, because Paul is so prophetic and monolithic that other than that one rousing speech, he's a pretty walled off guy.
Yeah.
Agent K was kind of the same. Mm-hmm. But when you're on that emotional ride with K, when you think he's that kid, you're like, oh, fuck yeah, my dude's that kid. And then when you find out he's not, you're devastated.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel that way about Paul at any single point. And that becomes a problem when the movie is relying so heavily on a relationship that I know his profiteering, which is not the right version of that word, but his prophetness is going to get in the way of regardless. And they try to literalize that point at the end where him being like, I will love you with every breath I take. And then being like, Florence Pugh, what up, girl? So even it's aware of the way in which its character, its lead character, undercuts its story's drama.
He's a inconsistent character intentionally, right? He's got so much in his fucking head that, how could you not be, a totally inconsistent person? It is a tough thing to portray on all fronts. It's interesting to... I do feel that, me personally, I was like, I don't want to see him go south, right? Because he knows if he goes south...
But you knew, right? Do you know...
I was aware that...
You mean, literally south.
Yeah,
but
literally.
I'm saying, you knew the Paul story going in.
Yeah, right? I knew that this ends with him doing some bad shit. And
what? The bad shit being what? That he chooses to fire on...
Well, he's gonna
families
kill all the houses.
Right.
That's his whole thing. He's
firing
going,
the nukes off. Is that what?
That seems to be the idea. Yeah. Okay. And
whoa, dude.
Yeah. Whoa. Yeah, brother. You're acting like Vladimir Putin
there,
over
boss.
Here. Yeah. This is crazy. But yeah, I was scared of him to go to the southern part of Arrakis, because he knows that if he does, the prophecy that he sees for himself of becoming a bad person or bad things happening and billions of people dying will come true. And we are starting to see that happen. And again, not knowing much about the next book, it does raise the question of and I know there's fucking 30 books. There's a lot of books. And so I think some of it's other stories within the universe.
Right.
I don't know how much of them revolve around Paul Atreides, but it does raise the question of will Zendaya's character be able to take him down? Is he blinded enough by his love for her that she could get close to him and probably not redeem him. I would say at a certain point, if he's talking about killing all these houses, may not be able to be redeemed, but could take him down feasibly. I mean, Paul Atreides is the emperor of the universe now. Like, that's real shit. Like, yeah. That's crazy. So he's mad with power. He does not have, like, Christopher Walken's emperor
who
is
was
like,
so good in that. You knew the one line that they paid him for.
Which one?
One at the end where I forget exactly what it is, but he's literally like one line that's not some like generic ruler type of thing, and I'm like, that's why they brought in the OG for that one line right
there.
He
doesn't have a lot of screen time, but he has a presence every time he's on. He fits right in, and you can see that kind of like menace on his face. Like, he's like, this is all so fucked out of proportion. Like, and that's the great thing is like, his emperor is like doing everything dirty in the shadows, right? Like, he's going behind people's backs to fuck over House of Atreides and stuff like that. And Paul Atreides is like, fuck it. Put everyone on blast. Like, this is a full-blown holy war. Like, we are going to kill everyone, and everyone's going to know we're going to war. And, like, that's the difference between
him. That's what frustrates the hell out of me is what enacts the change? I guess once he drinks that worm thing.
Yeah.
But emotionally, why does he go from being scared of going south and being scared of, as he said, millions starving for my holy war? I don't understand what brings him to his choice at the end of the film to literally be the one to enact these things.
He is called upon by like some like counselors or something. There are these people there that need to have a meeting, and he is brought there because of that. Because something is happening. It's been a few days since I've seen it, but whatever is happening with the how do they say it? The Harknesses?
Harkonnens.
Harkonnens. And I think the emperor is coming at this point as well. I can't remember. But there is something about war that is being discussed. And they are like, only a leader can attend this and speak at this meeting. That's why nobody at that meeting at the end is there. So they're like, you have to go because you are our leader. We've put you in that position. Bad things will happen if you don't go speak up. And once he's there, he drinks that worm juice.
Yeah.
And I assume
of life.
You can see his mom as well start to become corrupted by whatever this is.
Yeah.
I hope we get a little bit more clarity on what the fuck all this shit is.
Well, they say they're still doing that show.
That's right. Yeah.
That's about them.
Yeah. So, but there's something going on with whatever that does to your mind that clearly brings some corruptness, corrupts you in some capacity. And maybe doesn't allow you to see clearly. Because as soon as he drinks that, he goes full tilt. Like, it's rocky.
But I'm not sure I get why, other than just because.
Yeah, I don't totally remember why he drank it. There's a lot.
No. The drinking thing he does because he believes in his mom, right?
She's
the one who kind of encourages him to do it.
Yeah.
But I don't understand. And that's another thing about Denis Villeneuve's visuals. Not just like the literal outer space stuff, but the way he's able to visualize very abstract visions and dreams in a way that's like comprehensible is awesome. So, because all this shit is basically gibberish, but because of the way that he's able to sort of deliver it to us, it makes some shred of sense. All right, so we've talked about our general thoughts. We've talked about the story and the visuals. Let's talk about some characters, which performances and so on that we like the most. I mean, even though I wasn't, as I've outlined, crazy with Paul's story, I thought Chalamet was really good. I think you said this Like, I didn't know he had that speed or juice to him. That one speech he gives is clearly the highlight of his performance as Paul so far. Same goes for Zendaya, even though like her skin looked way too good for somebody who's spent an entire lifetime in like a harsh desert.
Not enough chapped lips.
Yeah, it's very hard to picture her as like a desert warrior, but I still thought that she was pretty good. Standouts for me are Rebecca Ferguson. I did not expect her story to go this way. Mm. I think she's fantastic in everything that she does, but to see her play you know, a little bit more of an evil turn, i.e. Dr. Sleep vibes. I'm always there for that. Josh Brolin is generally one of my favorite actors out there. I love the sort of experience and wisdom and toughness he gives he gives his role. Batista, I thought it was hilarious how his character was a giant pussy. I thought he played that well. I did not see that coming at all. I thought that was a great little...
He's very insecure.
Yeah, a great little twist. Javier Bardem, using that character as sort of the comic relief and the spiritual compass of this film and combining those two things in one and allowing Bardem to be what he is, which is one of the best actors alive. I thought that he was the standout of the film, which I don't think is really surprising. I think that it's kind of clear that he's meant to be, you know, whereas Paul's very serious and Shani is like very serious. He's like actually like has like some real personality to him that you didn't expect at all based on Dune Part One. You know, the first scene he's in, he shows up and he spits on the floor and he's like, I have to go now. Like he's deadly serious in that first one. But in this one, they clearly use him as the film's comedic beats, but also like the zealot of the lot, which is an interesting mix. And I thought it worked great.
I really like Josh Brolin. I was like, I'm not sure how much we're going to see of him in this movie. I don't know what his role is because I knew he was coming back, but I was like, I don't know what role he plays.
What was he doing when they find him?
He's working with smugglers.
Okay, smugglers, gotcha.
Yeah. And he's probably the highlight of the movie outside of like the immediate cast, you know. He's like my favorite supporting character. I really like Josh Brolin in general, and I think he's really great here as kind of like that father figure that Paul doesn't have anymore. And also like you can see that he's still serving Paul's father through him. And I love that. And that you undying
when like Paul is like G'ing up like the crowd at the end, being like, I'm the fucking ruler now. He's basically the only one who's hyped.
Yeah. He's like has this undying loyalty to Paul.
Yeah.
To the extent that he's willing to call him my lord and all this stuff. Right, and like I love that. And at the very end when he's like, you know, I'll fight Fade. Yeah, he's like, no, sick. I got this.
That was and sick though. That was so
it
sick.
It was. And he's like, why does he take these risks? And I'm like, I just love that. I love his whole character. And I love that they more or less kind of do a parallel to that fall of House Atreides in the first movie, the big battle sequence at their palace or whatever. Yeah. They kind of do that again with Gurney going through fucking all of them up and killing Batista's character. I'm like, this is so great. All these one-to-one parables, like callbacks, it's just so smart. And I really like his character. And then Austin Butler's getting a lot of, you know, praise. And I really like him in the movie. He's not the Joker. He's not.
That's a fucking crazy call.
He doesn't have enough screen time is the biggest thing. He doesn't have enough screen time to get any of that, those accolades. He comes in and he's very menacing. He's very scary. He's very good. It's just like he's not in the movie enough to be that kind of shark. As opposed to a shark, I feel he's more of a snake. I really liked him, and I was a little sad that he does die at the end because I was like, oh, I kind of want to see more of this guy. And that's why I was hoping that his child will be him,
right?
Just because I selfishly want more of him. But what he does do is great, and I mean the fight sequences in this movie between him and other people are so intense. I don't know about you, but during that last one with him and Paul, I was holding my breath. Like I felt like tense in my body. Like I was like, this is really intense and engaging and scary.
I did enjoy it. I will say the way that Paul eventually got him,
a little bit of plot armor, maybe, you know.
I don't know.
he gets stabbed like what, two or three times, and then he just stabs him back and is all good. No, maybe there's something there in the first movie that like that also kind of parallels, like he learned something that pays off in the end that I wasn't
his dad tries to kill the Baron when he gets close to him, not necessarily the same thing. I will just say, I guess the pass that I'll give Denis is like Fade Rautha seemed to be the type of like arrogant prick that would not end a fight when he clearly can. and would instead talk shit. So that part,
that's what we see in the arena, right? Right, he could probably have killed that guy much sooner, and he doesn't.
I also just want to shout out the hilarity of casting Lea Seydoux as just a sexy little freak, which is basically the only character she ever plays.
Yeah, no, she's awesome, and I
hope shows up to beat hot, read minds, and then leaves.
Fuck, get pregnant. Yeah. She's awesome. Everyone, even the people who has small amounts of screen time, are doing some of their best work, right? Like they're really crushing it, and I hope that means there's more for them in the next movie. Although you can see that everyone backing Paul is probably not a good person. I mean, it's not as black and white as that, but like there is like some evilness behind his mother and him, especially his mother. You kind of feel satisfied, at least I did, when she looks over at the Reverend Sister, whatever her name is, and is like, "You chose the wrong side," or whatever. And I'm like, oh, fuck that bitch. Fuck that old hag. Yeah. Like, let's go.
What did you think of the death of the Baron?
Oh, it's so pathetic, right? Like, it's just so slimy and pathetic. It's exactly what he deserves. He's climbing to kind of claim the throne for himself, even though I'm sure that doesn't mean anything. Like, he's like, he wants that chair at the top of the fucking staircase, and he can't get there, and Paul just comes and puts him down like an animal.
Yep.
Yeah. This rocks.
And they throw you for a second when he's like, "Grandfather." I'm like, "Oh shit, is he about to save this motherfucker?" But nope. He just had to let him know before he killed him.
I know what your secret is. Yeah, it's just so good.
And then one minor complaint I have is the way in which guns are deployed in this world. Mm. There's a lot of sword fighting. There's a lot of missiles and nukes, and we see them use guns, but nobody has them.
Mm.
Why?
I wonder if there's like, I wonder if there is like a almost Mad Max style, like they're trying to conserve bullets or something, especially on like the Fremen. You know, I can see them not having a wide surplus.
See my point? How it's like,
why? They don't explain it. Yeah. Like, I feel like there should be more to that about, like, why don't we use guns? Because, I mean, they explain why they have these rockets. They were hidden, you know? So it's obvious, like, that's fair. Like, they were hiding those and can use them now. But, no, you make a valid point. I would be curious to go back and pay more attention to if the guards kind of at the end have more guns than the Fremen do, and see if they're just hopelessly outmatched because they know the ways of the desert and shit.
Yep.
But yeah, no, I do see your point.
All right. So that's it for me. Do you have any, final parting thoughts?
Not really. I just think it's a awesome movie. I really enjoyed it. A good start to the year. Hope that we don't have to wait a terribly long time for Messiah. I know Denny has like one of the projects he's working on right now, and I think he said it'll be a while, but I hope it's not like a super long time. I would like to get the conclusion to this sooner rather than later. But
even though the film that he's doing sounds sick.
What is it exactly? I don't know if I've paid enough attention.
Hold on.
I know it stars someone we like, I think.
Well, he was supposed to be making a HBO show with Jake Gyllenhaal. Right. I don't know what's going on with that. The film is an adaptation of the book called Rendezvous with Rama, which he has previously described as Arrival on steroids. Random note here, I was just looking up who wrote this film alongside Denis, and it's a guy named John Spates. His first credit is The Darkest Hour, which is a 2011 sci-fi action film that stars Emile Hirsch. Mm-hmm. And then from there, what a odd career this guy has had. Prometheus in 2012. Doctor Strange in 2016. Passengers in 2016. He did the story for the Tom Cruise, The Mummy. So he's not getting an official screenwriting credit here, but he's got a story credit. And then Dune 1 and Dune 2.
Huh. I wonder if he knows a guy.
I know. How did Villeneuve find this guy?
No disrespect to this guy, but it's like that's such like a interesting career where you're not working on many small movies. You're kind of just working on the big hitters. Like that's pretty, it's pretty crazy. And like, to earn the trust of
like
somebody.
Half of them are sick and then half of them are dogs.
Yeah,
very
interesting.
Weird.
I wonder if he's someone who's like he writes a first draft and then someone else comes in and changes it and makes it worse. I don't know.
His sci-fi romance 2007 was included on the 2007 blacklist.
Cool.
Of unproduced screenplays. The brief was commissioned. Yeah. And then after Keanu Reeves agreed to produce and star in Passengers, this writer was commissioned by the CEO of Ridley Scott's production company to write the next two installments of the Alien saga, two prequel films to be directed by Ridley Scott.
He didn't write those.
He wrote Prometheus, but he did not write Covenant. At least as far as wow, what a career. Okay. That'll do it this week on Post Credit Podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Please leave us a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. If you haven't already, make sure to follow myself on Twitter at Eric_Ital and the podcast at Post Credit Pod. Follow Cade at Cade_Onder. And also if you have an opportunity for him, you can reach out to him at, not the like at symbol, but just here's where you could reach him, CadeOnder0@gmail.com, right, Cade?
Correct.
All right, that is going to do it for this week. We will talk to you later. Peace.
My name is Maximus Decimus Meridius.